Wusstest du, dass TK Maxx immer die besten Markendeals hat? Duftkerzen für alle, Sportoutfits, stylische Pieces für dein Zuhause, Designer-Handtasche, check, check, check. Bei TK Maxx findest du große Marken zu unglaublichen Preisen. Psst. Im Onlineshop auf tkmaxx.de kannst du rund um die Uhr die besten Markendeals shoppen. TK Maxx, immer der bessere Deal im Store und online.
Attention. Achtung. This podcast is going to be in English. Dieser Podcast wird auf Englisch gezeigt. So please tune in for the next German podcast next Monday. Also bitte schaut einfach nächsten Montag wieder rein, dann gibt's den Podcast wieder auf Deutsch. Los geht's. Here we go. Hello dear friends and welcome to a new episode of the Veggie World podcast. I am Lars and every Monday I'm feeding you tips, news, interviews and everything related to the vegan lifestyle really. And this week I'm talking to psychologist and author Dr. Melanie Joy on how we can improve our relationships. Thanks so much for tuning in, folks. It's such a pleasure to finally give you the first ever English version of the Veggie World podcast. For those of you who are still bewildered as you stumbled upon this little piece of audio knowledge, this is the Veggie World podcast. It's the official podcast of the Veggie World, which is Europe's biggest vegan trade fair. I am Lars. I'm just a regular guy from Germany. I'm a voice actor and a photographer, and I'm trying to reach as many people as possible with this medium, you know, with this podcast. And this marks not only our first English episode, but also our 31st episode in total. We started in June 2017 and we've been broadcasting every Monday for, half a year now, with the August off because I travelled to New Zealand. So usually this podcast runs on German language fuel, you know, we talk in German all the time, but we thought we broaden our horizon just a tiny bit, you know, which brings us here. Today I'm bringing you an interview with the wonderful Dr. Melanie Joy, who is a psychologist and author of multiple books, public speaker, co-founder of ProVeg International, and the list goes on and on and on, SEVA, the Center for Effective Vegan Advocacy, and so on. To sum it up, she's very, very smart. Talking to her, I felt very, very not smart, in fact. And it was an amazing interview, and thank you so much, Dr. Joy, again, in hindsight, for putting up with me, because I was very nervous. I was nervous as hell when I talked to her, and I'm always, of course, listening to the interviews after I recorded them, and I was a stuttering mess. So please excuse me for being that at the time. I recorded Dr. Joy when we met at the Veggie World in November 2017 in Berlin, and we talked about her new book, Beyond Beliefs, and about communication in general. And it was a lovely interview. Just please excuse my stuttering and mumbling, because I was very nervous. I was a bit of a fanboy, to be honest. And also German is my first language, and English is just a learned language. And as you hear now, I'm much more comfortable in talking in a perversion of the British accent. I'm much more fluent in it now, and I do have the tendency to switch to the accent I hear. So when I talk to Americans, I tend to do more of an American accent. So that's what you hear there. A perversion of the American accent, basically, not of a British accent. So it was a great pleasure to talk to Dr. Joy about improving relationships between vegans and non-vegans, which I think is one of the most important topics of our time, as it determines how fast or how slow we can make a change in this tiny little blue world. A tiny disclaimer on the sound quality of this particular episode. We recorded this interview in a very big, very empty room in Berlin, and there might be a tiny bit of reverb. Please excuse that. I'm working on it, but I have to work with the room I'm getting on the particular, you know, location. So that's that. Just before we jump in, please let us know if you like this podcast. Please write to me. I'm going to give you an info at the end of the podcast, or give us a review. Because if you like this, then we can make more of them and we'll do more English podcasts in tandem with the German podcast. Because in German, they tend to do very well, really. And we like to, as we said, broaden the horizon a bit and feed the world with good podcast, you know, content. Although I hate the word content because people tend to do content for content's sake these days, but we really care about content. Who is we, by the way? That's me, Lars, and the Veggie World team, of course, who do this very passionately. And we really care about this planet and the animals and the people on it. So, without further ado, there was a lot of ado, actually. Let's jump right into the conversation with Dr. Melanie Joy. So I'm here very excited with our first English episode with Dr. Melanie Joy. Thank you so much for being here. It's really an honor to have you here.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's a real pleasure for me.
So for the people who don't know you yet, like the two people in the world, who are you and what exactly do you do?
So I'm a psychologist, and I'm also the author of the book Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, which is basically on the psychology of eating animals. And I'm also a speaker, and I'm the founding president of the organization Beyond Carnism, which is focused on the information I provide in my first book. It's about raising, our mission is to raise awareness of and transform carnism, the invisible belief system that conditions people to eat certain animals. I'm also a relationship coach, and I'm a co-founder of ProVeg International. So we do a lot of work here in Berlin and also internationally with ProVeg.
You've been vegan for quite some time now. You've become vegan before like the big vegan boom in like 2010, 2012. Mm-hmm. What was it like for you when you became vegan, and what was like the evolution? How did you perceive the changes that happened over time in people's like worlds?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, and my experience through veganism is largely what informed all of my books that I've since written, in you know, particular this new one as well, Beyond Beliefs, right, which is for about communications and relationships. I became vegetarian in 1989, not even vegan, but pretty close to vegan at the time. And yeah, it was not, you know, it wasn't that easy to find vegan foods. I mean, the term vegan was not known really at all. My mother thought I was going to die before my 30th birthday. I was 23 then. She's now recently become vegan herself in her 70s. So a lot's changed. So back then when I would tell people I was vegetarian, you know, they'd look at me like I had two heads. Now when I say I'm vegan, the response is very frequently like, oh, that's why you look so young, or that's why you're so healthy, or I wish I could be vegan. Good for you. So it's changed quite a bit, and certainly in the past 5 years, we've seen a tremendous transformation globally of the vegan movement just really starting to take off. I've been to 40 countries now, and yeah, I haven't seen an exception of the growth of the movement. The trajectory is the same everywhere I go.
Really? That's interesting, because I've recently been to New Zealand, and I thought, wow, this is just such a meat-eating country. I mean, Germany still is as well, but I think it's all a part of perspective. But do you think that even in Asia or India, India is it's an easy one for them, but are there like cultural differences in how people change their mind?
Certainly. I mean, the trajectory is the same, meaning the direction of the growth of the movement is the same, but the level of development of the movement is certainly not the same in every country. So, you know, some countries are far more advanced when it comes to the development of veganism. You know, Germany, for example, Israel, the U.S., to some degree the U.K. But, you know, New Zealand is a very meaty country, and 5 years ago, it was a meatier country than it is today. I mean, they've got a very active more than one. They've got very active vegan groups there that are doing really great work. So
And they even have like podcasters that are like in the end of the South Island and doing like their podcast for three people or something. So they are really passionate people there as well. That's true. So you've been to 40 countries. How? Why? I mean, what started that? And what do you do there? Do you speak? Do you do talks like here on the Veggie World? Or
yeah, I mean, it was inspired by the release of my first book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. I started what became an international speaking tour, giving my carnism presentation around the world. And eventually, we launched the Center for Effective Vegan Advocacy, which is a program of Beyond Carnism. Tobias Lehner and I are the co-directors of that. And we travel around the world training vegan advocates.
Wow.
My first book is actually on strategy. It's called Strategic Action for Animals. So we train vegan advocates on how to communicate effectively, how to take care of yourself, how to think strategically. And we do organizational consulting and other movement building activities. And so between the Carnism Awareness Speaking Tour and SIVA, I've had the opportunity to go and give talks to, you know, a meat eating public, to a vegan public, and also to do SIVA trainings. And so it's given me really a bird's eye view of the movement, where I've really been able to see the movement from this kind of...
You see like the big picture.
This big picture, wow, of the movement. And that's why I feel pretty confident when I can talk about the trajectory and the global growth of the movement.
Yeah, you have like a unique perspective on that. That's amazing. So just to get that basically out of the way, because so many people know the term by now, what is carnism? Because you kind of coined the phrase and or the term. What is it, and how does it work?
So carnism is the invisible belief system that conditions people to eat certain animals. It's essentially the opposite of veganism.
Right.
We tend to assume that only vegans and vegetarians follow a belief system, but the only reason that many of us learn to eat pigs but not dogs, for example, is because we do have a belief system when it comes to eating animals. My work has been to highlight carnism. It was what I had kind of discovered in my research when I was doing my doctoral dissertation on the psychology of eating meat, and to really help us have a more objective conversation about eating animals. Carnism is a system that it's violent and it runs counter to core human values. So most people would never willingly participate in intensive and completely unnecessary violence toward other animals. And yet they do so on a regular basis. And they do this in large part because they've been born into this system that's invisible. They don't see it. And that conditions them psychologically to disconnect from the reality of what they're doing when they're eating meat, eggs, and dairy. And so, you know, I think it's impossible to have an objective conversation about eating animals as long as we're talking from within the very system that conditions us to see eating animals as fully legitimate.
Right. And this belief system is really, it's in our blood, basically.
It's entrenched.
It's really, I mean, we got this from, like, with our mother's milk, most of us, I mean, the Western culture especially. So your new book, which has a very short title, I have to say, Beyond Beliefs, A Guide to Improving Relationships and Communication for Vegans, Vegetarians, and Meat Eaters. It's a bit short.
Well, the title is Beyond Beliefs, but the subtitle is pretty long.
No, so it's Beyond Beliefs, which is a really good title, by the way.
Thank you.
You tackle this huge topic of communication between all of us and getting basically better discussions out of it. And I think that's such an important theme, because so many people who turn vegan, like the fresh vegans are, many. I have many in my show who said they were so aggressive and so... so depressed because they thought, okay, I now made this change. Why doesn't anyone else see what's going on and we have to change that? And not being able to reach out to people who are still stuck in this belief system. So how do you tackle that in your book?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote my book because I discovered after, you know, having traveled so extensively and talked with so many thousands of vegans and also vegetarians, which many vegans are surprised to discover have a very similar experience in relationship and communication issues. They were just saying over and over again that they felt, you know, this empowering experience of becoming vegan suddenly, they discovered their enthusiasm suddenly turned to shock and horror when they started talking about veganism with people and found that they were on the receiving end of you know, hostile humor, and otherwise rational, compassionate people would tell them, don't tell me that, you'll ruin my meal, and treat the vegan as though they were irrational when they were simply trying to highlight the irrationality of the system that is, you know, invisible to so many of us. So my book has, it's based on, you know, it's really looking at the principles of creating healthy relationships, which apply to all relationships. It's relationships between people in, you know, among people in general, relationships between vegans and other vegans, and not just intimate relationships, you know, friendships, relationships between activists. How do we treat one another in a way that can help us be more connected and feel more secure rather than cause us to feel disconnected and angry and distant from one another? And then also, really specifically, I have a chapter that's just on communication. What are the principles and tools for actually being able to communicate about these issues, or really any issue, but I focus on veganism in this, so that we increase the chances that our message will be heard the way we intend it to be, to reduce the likelihood that we'll be silenced.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the most important discussions that we have to have. I mean, we had a German episode on this as well, because we all think, like, becoming vegan is like, that's it, you don't need to do anything else. But I think talking about it and getting more and more education about it is just so important. So, I mean, especially when you're in a family, I think families have a lot of potential for conflict in them when one
you
family
think so?
Member, well, maybe.
Not families.
Well, you know, when like one spouse becomes vegan, or I mean, I know someone who's really depressed because his wife and his son don't see the reason to become vegan, and he's like a very passionate vegan. How can we tackle that? How can we talk to each other better?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really it's challenging with families, you know, and I don't even look at this as tackling an issue, because it's not really about, you know, fighting something, but rather engaging with it in a way that creates greater connection and openness. And it's there's a lot of pain and suffering in families, or even in, you know, in friendships where one person becomes vegan and the other doesn't, because there's so much misunderstanding. And vegans are, because of carnism distorts people's perceptions of not just meat, eggs, and dairy to make them look like, you know, food rather than dead animals or dead animal products.
Right, yeah.
Carnism also distorts people's perceptions of vegans and veganism. So when one person becomes vegan, another person who is not vegan may very well still maintain these stereotypes and attitudes about what it means to be vegan, and is often automatically defended against that person. What happens for many people, first of all, there are often existing power dynamics in families in place. So then veganism just becomes another issue that develops into a power struggle, you know.
Right.
So now it's like, you know, the black sheep in the family, so-called black sheep, is often the one who's most likely to become vegan, the person who's open to different ideas, sometimes who's more sensitive, and then the family will be like, oh, great, now you're vegan on top of everything else, right?
Right.
And so instead of just really engaging with this topic, it's more fodder for struggle, for power struggles. And so understanding this is a first step, understanding that, you know, underneath the difference in ideology is a relationship between two people, and that's where the attention needs to go. And healthy relational dynamics look exactly the same, no matter what the quote-unquote superficial, meaning that they're just on top of the relationship.
Right.
No matter what the superficial differences are, if people know how to relate to one another with fundamental respect and compassion and openness, most differences are manageable.
I think that patience is another really important factor, because, I mean, I'm just from my experience, I had so many friends who are now vegan, and they needed like years. I mean, I needed years, obviously. And so what's your advice for vegans who feel like they're like burning out? I mean, you had this topic at your talk. What's your advice for people who just feel burnt out because they had so many discussions? They get, especially activists who have this like every day, when you don't feel that you can take it anymore, like just the same questions or criticism all over again.
Yeah, well, I think there are a few different issues to look at here. I mean, one is how can a relationship be? How can a vegan or vegetarian be in a relationship with people around them who are not vegan or vegetarian, and be okay with that? How can that work? Patients suggest that we're waiting for the other person to become vegan, but it's very often when we stop expecting another person to become vegan that really that openness happens. We can't really make other people change. Relationships are not a forum really for advocacy. Often vegans try to get the people that are closest to them to go vegan, in part because they want to be able to share that part of their lives with them and it'll just be easier, and in part because they really want to be promoting veganism. But often these are the most challenging, you know, people to be doing outreach to. And what I encourage, a number of things. I mean, one thing that I encourage vegans to do is to ask the people in their lives to become not vegan, but vegan allies. So a vegan ally is a supporter of vegans and veganism who isn't fully vegan themselves. And sometimes for vegans, that's actually enough. Sometimes the real problem is not that the other person is still eating animals. The real problem is that the other person doesn't understand and respect the vegan for who they are and what they believe in. And in order to have any kind of connection in a relationship, everybody needs to feel like they're understood and seen for who they are. We all need to feel like we can bring ourselves fully into the relationship. And vegans often feel like they have to hide what they care about most from the people around them. And so I have in my book like a script for people to ask for another person to become a vegan ally and to say, like very specifically, I'm not asking you to become vegan. I just need you to know what the world looks like through my eyes. So you know why veganism is so important to me. You know what it means to me. And so I feel like you're on my side with this. And that can shift a dynamic tremendously.
Absolutely. I think when I started to talk to people and say, you know, just take your time, go one step at a time, and just do as every step counts, basically, is, I think, a very important message that people don't feel pressured to go all the way, because I think that's a big threshold for people. When they hear vegan, they think, okay, I have to change my life. I have to turn it 180 degrees around. But if I just have to, like, eat less right now.
Well, that's true when we're talking about advocacy, for sure. What I'm talking about here is relating. Think, you know, outside of like trying to get the other person to change, and you're absolutely right. It's a much easier ask to ask somebody to, as I suggest, become as vegan as possible.
Right.
But asking somebody to become a vegan ally is asking them to basically have your back, to be on your side, to know your world, to respect you. And so for me, for example, in my family, nobody in my family became vegan when I did, but they were allies, and that was enough for me. Like, there was never, I mean, in the very beginning, there was, you know, joking, and people didn't really understand. But once the people in my family stopped and really took the time to learn about what veganism was, to learn about why it mattered to me, they were very sensitive to me. They would keep the meat off the table. Eventually, we just had, you know, vegan Thanksgivings because nobody else minded, even though they weren't vegan. And I felt like they understood me, they respected my values, and they were willing to do what they needed to do to help me feel respected and safe. And for me, that was enough.
I think that goes a bit hand in hand with one of the goals from ProVeg, which you co-founded, the 40-50 goal, that your mm-hmm. goal to reduce the world meat consumption by 50% by 2040. Is that mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So what's your perspective on that, on reducing the meat intake instead of having the goal to make everyone go vegan as soon as possible?
Yeah, I mean, the activist, the great animal rights activist, Henry Spira, said, if you go into a negotiation asking for all or nothing, chances are you're going to come out with nothing.
Right.
You know, and most people don't go vegan overnight. And so you know, often understandably, but problematically, make the mistake of assuming that either somebody is vegan and they're part of the solution, or they're not vegan and they're part of the problem, and we eliminate a lot of options for people and influencers and organizations and institutions to be a part of the solution and to help us move towards a vegan world. And it's very, very important that we relate to the world not the way we wish it were, but the way it actually is. It's sort of like, you know, if you know it's going to rain and you don't bring an umbrella, don't complain about your hair getting wet. You know, because you don't want it to rain doesn't mean it's not raining. So it's very important
very well said.
It's kind of a form of vegan denial in some ways that we can engage in.
Yeah, I think you're removing a lot of gray areas if you just have this black and white view.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your take on, which is something coming up constantly now for me is the cultured meat. Were you like part of some discussions there? I mean, you were in Berlin when the End of Meat film, for example, came out, and mm-hmm. they had a discussion there. And I know that Nico Rittenau has now his Plant-Based Symposium episode with Dr. Mark Post, who does the cultured meat. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that?
I mean, I think it's anything that helps us to reduce suffering and increase compassion and health in the world is typically a step in the right direction. The people who are promoting cultured meat or clean protein, you know, and there's lots of, I would actually rather speak to clean protein than just simply cultured meat, because there are a lot of different ways that people are kind of coming at this same kind of change, which is basically providing products that look and taste like meat, but aren't they're not from a dead animal, from a slaughtered animal.
Right.
And because, again, many people are not willing to just go vegan, and they're not willing, and there are some people who are not even willing to eat a veggie burger if they know that it's made from vegetable protein. So it just makes sense strategically to be coming at this issue from a variety of angles.
Yeah, right. And how do you see the future? Do you see changes? I mean, you have this inside view of things. How do you see the evolution of these things go for the next couple of years?
Do you mean these things being clean proteins, or do you mean the movement in general?
I think the movement in general. I mean, the clean protein, I think it's just going to drop in price, and it's going to be more available. But the movement in general, how do you, looking at that, what you have accomplished by now, mm-hmm. how do you see the future?
You know, I see that the trajectory is very clear. We're heading more and more toward veganism. I see one of the things that I think is actually critical toward the success of the vegan movement and toward just the kind of change that we're looking for in the world in general is the movement becoming more self-aware and more critical when it comes to other isms and other systems of oppression, like racism and sexism, and the variety of other isms that are out there. And I think that the speed of evolution of the vegan movement will depend to some extent on how willing vegans are to start thinking outside of veganism as the, you know, only ism. And many vegans do think outside of this box already, but some have not yet kind of started to really examine the ways in which we may be participating in things that we don't, you know, that are not aligned with our values, like
right.
race and gender. So I see that as critical. It's starting to happen. More conversations are starting to happen around this. The United States is really starting to become more and more focused on the interconnectedness of isms within the vegan movement. So I think if that trajectory continues, then we will continue to move even more quickly toward the kind of vegan world that we want to be creating.
Great. You live in Germany now, or
yes.
do you live like all over the place and you just...
No, I travel all over the place, but I live in Berlin.
Okay, cool. And you have a German husband. Do you see any difference?
The U.S. has a much stronger health focus. You know, there are two kind of parallel movements happening in the U.S. There's the vegan movement, which is ethically focused, and then there's the health movement, plant-based movement, which is health focused. And of course, there's overlap, and there are people
right.
who straddle both, and I'm one of them. Here, the movement tends to be more ethically focused. We have a lot of a number of physicians and physicians' organizations in the United States that are working to raise awareness of the health benefits of a plant-based diet and the dangers of eating an animal-based diet. And that's something that's starting to happen over here in Europe and in other places in the world, but it hasn't caught up with the U.S. And so the food difference is that there's more vegan. I mean, Berlin, for example, is incredibly vegan-friendly.
Yeah.
And it's also a lot of kind of comfort vegan foods or traditional German vegan foods, which are not necessarily healthy. And I think it's very important for us to have, you know, incorporate more of a health focus. In the U.S., a lot of people become vegan or become pro-vegan because they eat vegan foods that are really their whole food plants and immediately notice the difference in their bodies and fairly quickly have, you know, can their physicians can see the difference in them.
Right. I think you have the big benefit of having so many doctors that are so fundamentally important in America, like Dr. Esselstein and Dr. Greger, and who else? I mean, you have so many. And in Germany, there aren't so many doctors who are that prominent and have that celebrity to promote that. And I think the Germans are just very conservative, and Americans are a little more progressive when it comes to changing. It's like, oh, it's good for me, I have to change it, no problem. It's this entrepreneurship that I see in Americans more. But I think it's very interesting. With your busy schedule, do you even have time to cook at home, or do you just eat away, or just take away all the time or something? Or do you still have like a private life where you say, okay, I'm at home now cooking for myself?
Yeah, I do still have a private life. And I do stay at home.
Jet setting all the time. Okay, good.
Not all the time, just a lot of the time. Yes, and I do have evenings where Sebastian cooks me dinner. So that's good. I don't do takeout or takeaway as much here as I used to in the U.S. because it's not... I used to do salad bars, and I can't. Right. I can't really do that here. So, so it's kind of a combination. I drink a lot of smoothies at home.
Okay, so it's really just smoothies are the solution for really busy people.
Well, busy people who want to also stay healthy, throw everything in a blender, and then you're okay.
Cool. Do you have now in the winter? Do you have a favorite season dish that you're just craving right now? Smoothies.
No, it gets harder to eat smoothies or drink smoothies in the winter. My big kale salads, I'm craving, but it's not really a winter food. But now it's become a winter food for me here in Germany because you guys have it in the winter.
Yeah.
So that tends to be what I'm craving, a big kale salad with lots of tofu and beans and...
That sounds pretty good,
veggies.
Actually. So do you have sometimes where you just have to shut down a little and say, okay, I really need my time out right now and just relax? And if so, what do you do for yourself?
I do that every single day.
Really?
Every day. I could not do the work I do unless I had time built into the day where I shut down and didn't work and turned the mind off. I do. My husband and I actually both use an app called Headspace for meditation. So meditate, and I watch Netflix in the evening if I want to.
Great.
I go for runs through Tiergarten. I work out pretty regularly, 5 days a week, 4 or 5 days a week. So, yeah, and I really encourage vegans to do this and to focus as much on self-care as possible, because it's easy to self-neglect. And the more we neglect ourselves, the more likely we are to get traumatized and burned out and be less effective ambassadors for the movement.
That's what you said in your talk, this self-respect, because there are so many ethically motivated vegans who just are there for the animals and who are just going for the comfort foods. So being healthy and staying healthy is as important for the advocacy, would you say?
It's fundamentally important. I think really it's one of the number one things that we can do as a movement is to commit to our own self-care and to really recognizing that taking care of our own bodies, sleeping well and eating well and being healthy and psychologically and emotionally healthy is exactly what we need to do so that we can be in this movement for the long haul and so that we can be effective in this movement, because otherwise we become burned out, frustrated, embittered, misanthropic, and we don't represent the movement the way that we want to or need to.
That's very important. Thank you for that. So what's your goal for the next year? Do you have short-term goals that you really want to tick off?
I'd like to get my book Beyond Beliefs in German soon enough. So by next year, yeah. And I'd like to really start doing more work and support for vegans and non-vegans in relationships and communication. And SEVA, the Center for Effective Vegan Advocacy, is going to be launching a series of videos that are going to be short, a couple of minutes long or so, tips for advocates, for people, how to talk about veganism, how to take care of yourself,
fantastic.
To really support the movement.
Wow, that's absolutely fantastic. I'm really looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Where can we find you and your work and your books?
At carnism.org.
Okay, that's the one go-to address to find everything.
Yeah,
good. Fantastic. Melanie, Dr. Joy, I really enjoyed this time with you. And thank you so much for doing what you do. I wish you all the good and the luck in the world. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Thanks for helping spread the word.
So once again, guys, thank you so much for putting up with my stuttering self. Again, the fanboy factor was pumped up to 1,000 at that time. And thanks again, Dr. Joy, for lending me your time and doing such a wonderful interview. I learned so much doing this, and I loved so many points that Dr. Joy made during this interview. The mutual respect that she talked about is crucial, I think, to every relationship, be it a partner, a friend, a family member, or a co-worker, especially regarding, of course, veganism and having a plant-based lifestyle. Telling people that you don't expect them to become vegan when you, in fact, became vegan, but to please understand why you are vegan is a big step. It lifts so much pressure of a potentially conflict-laden situation for the future. And speaking of expectations, when we stop to expect our partners and friends to become vegan, we open up, you know, we relax a bit. And that's a great point from Dr. Joy. I see that right now, as we released the 30th episode of our German podcast last Monday, I got messages from someone I never ever expected to rethink their consumption of dairy products. And they now started testing plant-based products, such as soy yogurt and oat milk and butter alternatives. And that for me is just amazing. It took such a long time to get there because, you know, I did talk to this guy and he was a really great colleague and he's a really open guy, you know, and being a vegetarian for years. But it never kind of occurred to me that he was really, you know, thinking about it. And he listened to my podcast, which I didn't expect him to do. And now he wrote to me and said, you know, I'm really rethinking my consumption of dairy products. Let me try, you know. And that's all I could ever ask, that somebody tries and of course to be there helping them. And trying out new stuff can be daunting when you try like plant-based milk or plant drinks, as we have to call them in Germany, because, you know, you're coming off cow's milk and you have like umpteenth million plant milks there. So yeah, what triggers people to start thinking about their consumption of animal products is, you know, it can be so many different things. Maybe it's a conversation you have or many conversations most times. Maybe it's a video or a podcast they listen to, or it's something entirely different. You never know, but that also means you must never give up, because someday they might, you know, ring at your door and say, okay, I think I'm going vegan now. It happened to me so many times. And sometimes it seems to be very hard work to do vegan advocacy. And I happily admit that I wanted to stick my head into the sand and quit everything more than one time, believe you me. But it pays off. It really does. And again, remember, you can't make everybody a vegan. Try to reach out and make vegan allies who understand why you are vegan but who are not vegan. I have friends who are very good friends who are not vegan, and you know, they might have family and they, you know, have 3 kids or something, and they say, oh, I understand why you are vegan, but I just can't do it right now. And I understand that, but they, you know, they eat vegan a lot, maybe not the entire time, but a lot. So please remember that as well. And that's about as far as I will go with my motivational speaking. And if you think now, because you're new to this podcast, Lars, Melanie said that already, so please shut up. I know, but I tend to, you know, summarize everything in the end of the podcast, and I really need to rephrase stuff for myself, and sometimes it helps people to just have stuff summarized and rephrased at the end. So I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. Also, looking at the big picture is absolutely essential, I think. Getting the world to rethink how we treat animals and the consequences of our actions is huge. Huge. It is huge. Sorry, I'm sorry. It creeps up every time now. So we need to be realistic and think about taking individual steps. Not small steps, necessarily. They can be small steps, but they can be big steps. But just one step at a time. Thanks again for sharing your thoughts with us, Dr. Joy. I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, guys. Please feel free to check out Dr. Joy's book, Beyond Beliefs. I have it. It's a great book. Or her other work, of course. The links are in the show notes, as usual in this podcast. You know, the links to her site, of course, you know, ProVeg International as well, and the Center for Effective Vegan Advocacy. Damn it. Every time I read something with a Center for in its name, I think about Derek Zoolander's Center for Children Who Can't Read Good. But that's, you know, just pop culturally challenged me, I guess. So check out, please, Dr. Joy. She's really amazing. And no, I'm not getting paid to say that. I really think she's amazing. If you want to check out the documentary we talked about called The End of Meat, discussing, among other things, cultured meat, check out the link in the show notes. There's also a link to an interview with Dr. Mark Post, who's one of the driving forces behind the development of cultured meat, or clean protein, as Dr. Joy called it. And of course, the final point that, you know, she made, let's not forget that. Look after yourselves, people. Take care of your bodies, take care of your time, and get enough sleep. Eat healthy food, work out, at least a little. And remember, if you don't take care of yourselves, you can't take care of anybody else. Also, as I said in the beginning, please let us know what you think of this podcast in English, because if you like it, we're not gunning, we're against guns. We're going to continue it in English as well as in German. We're going to do like a tandem program, and we're going to get you more cool stuff, you know, more news, more tips, more interviews with cool international guests, which is a claim I'm going to back when we come to that. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but I have people in mind who are really, really cool, who I want to get in front of the microphone. So, yeah, and that's also, as you might have noticed, mixed with a little weird humour by me. Please feel free to give us a review on the podcast platform of your choice, or write to me directly, which is Lars, that's L-A-R-S, or L-A-R-A-S, at veggieworld.de, and let me know. Because I'd love to continue my voyage of peaceful world domination. Thank you. Next Monday, if you're interested and if you understand a little bit of Deutsch, I'm going to tackle the topic of eggs, how they're produced, what it means to the chickens. I'll give you some data on the egg industry, on the effects on health and environment. And of course, I'm going to give you a ton of tips for vegan alternatives for eggs. Seriously, there are so many things that you can use instead of eggs. It's ridiculous. Oh, by the way, if you're interested in listening to something like the egg topic in English, please let us know. I'd be happy to oblige. Until then, dear friends, have a great week. This was so much fun, and I'm looking forward to more podcasts in English if you like. Thanks so much for tuning in, and ciao.
Wie viele Kaffees waren es heute schon? Kaffee spielt im Leben vieler eine sehr große Rolle. Und das nicht nur zu Hause oder im Café, sondern auch am Arbeitsplatz. Dafür gibt es Lavazza Professional. Kaffee am Arbeitsplatz, der genauso lecker schmeckt wie in eurem Lieblingscafé. Die perfekte Kaffeelösung für jede Art von Unternehmen. Klein, mittel, groß. Ihr habt auf jeden Fall einen Kaffee, der schmeckt. Die richtige Motivation für eure Arbeitstage. Alle Infos zu Lavazza Professional findet ihr auf lavazzapro.de mit allen Kaffeelösungen für euer Büro.
Wusstest du, dass TK Maxx immer die besten Markendeals hat? Duftkerzen für alle, Sportoutfits, stylische Pieces für dein Zuhause, Designer-Handtasche, check, check, check. Bei TK Maxx findest du große Marken zu unglaublichen Preisen. Psst. Im Onlineshop auf tkmaxx.de kannst du rund um die Uhr die besten Markendeals shoppen. TK Maxx, immer der bessere Deal im Store und online.